there's always way for you to, you know, start to make make more innovative approach, innovative solutions, work with your partners. And, you know, we also want to do this a little bit more compliantly so that, you know, people feel comfortable about it as well, because it's, you know, it's people's salaries, people's benefits. So we want to do this the right way, and doing the right way is the hard way in this industry today, unfortunately. So I'm hoping some, you know, common sense regulations gets passed.
Welcome to the ATX DAO podcast, the hub for exploring the forefront of blockchain technology and Austin's Web3 community. Your hosts, Nick, Mason, Luke, and Ash, connect you with innovators within ATX DAO and beyond as we venture into the world of decentralized technology. So crack open a beer and join us for a front row seat to learn about the innovations and trends shaping our digital future. This is the ATX DAO podcast. Welcome, listeners, to the ATX DAO podcast. We are very excited today to welcome a special guest. We have Naveen Biskota, president and co-founder of Neural. Naveen, welcome to the show, man. We're really happy to have you.
Thanks, Luke, and great to great to be in this in pod today with you guys. Like Luke mentioned, I'm Naveen. You know, started Neural about 3 years ago. This is my third company. You know, I come from traditional finance, and I'm really, really psyched to talk to you guys today about, you know, what Neural is bringing to the space.
Just for a little bit of background, so obviously we're members of the DAO, but we all both have day jobs and things that we do. So I've actually been in banking for 24 years, so real familiar with payroll stuff. I was really excited to kind of hear a little bit more about what y'all do in terms of like really everything with payroll, treasuries, all that kind of stuff. Ash is in the startup world. I don't know if Ash, you want to share more about what you do.
Yeah, like basically I come from a world of traditional finance originally. I was in wealth management in UBS and ING, left that, and then did a weird tangent into architecture, but that's how I discovered crypto, actually. A friend of mine was running a market making firm and then left that and then told me that there's this firm giving out 150K checks for interesting economic experiments. And since you come from a math and like kind of a dev background, why don't you ship on this? And that firm was Alameda.
Very cool.
Yeah, so this was in 2018, 2019. So before DeFi summer and stuff like that happened, before FTX and all this stuff came in, and then been like serially building in the space in some capacity or another, either like core team or like founding team. So yeah, like the ETH, Cardano, Polkadot, now we're building on Dogecoin of all places. So yeah, man, definitely crypto native and definitely on the left end of the spectrum. Right, Luke kind of is on the right side. So you have a good decent standard distribution over here.
Yes, for me, you know, I was at, I also came from traditional finance, spent 10 years in Wall Street. I was on the asset management side. At JPM and Citi Private Bank, you know, private equity, real estate, hedge funds. I was the CFO of their alternative investment platform for about 8 years. Wow. And then, you know, I discovered Bitcoin and blockchain back in 2015. I just recently married to my fiance at that time, my wife now. She was at a Twitter, you know, early, another startup that was acquired by Twitter. And then she was telling me about this weird Bitcoin thing. It's like, it's already $100, you know, it's like it's going up to 150. And then, you know, and I didn't pay any attention at that time because I was a banking, right? Even to sell a stock, like I have to go get someone's permission.
Oh,
Bitcoin,
yeah.
And all these other stuff, like can't even, you know, think about them, right? And then somehow, like in the summer of 2015, started to hear more and more about it. And then there was an article about some guy paid, you know, some Bitcoin to buy pizza. And then now it's already up to like $200-$300. So that's how I started to get into a little bit more and ended up buying some Bitcoins, you know, when it was like at $600-$700 at that time. Mm. That's my introduction to sort of in crypto and blockchain. I was always, you know, part of this blockchain initiative at Citi because they're already thinking about it back in the day as well, within the IT tech, you know, sector, but then they never did anything. They only talked about it. And then started looking into more and more, and and that's why I got a little bit more fascinated with blockchain and what it could do for the TradFi business and all these other payments and whatnot. Ripple, XRP, I think at that time was starting to make some noise about, oh, we're going to replace Swift and blah, blah, blah. So we started looking into this a little bit more as well and kind of got into more about maybe we should just think about starting a business around payments and fintech using payments, you know, cross-border payments using blockchain in 2017. In 2017, if you were in New York, if you're in blockchain, I think the only engineers you could find like somewhere in Eastern Europe and Estonia. And I don't know that the world wasn't that global in 2017.
Right. You're like from New York to like, Tallinn.
Yeah, yeah. I was like, I don't think we can trust them, right? You know, to do anything. So, you know, in 2018, you know, I left banking and started another company with my current co-founders who were more around B2C consumer fintech. And interestingly, we did like an AI, built a super agent, AI agent that automatically negotiated consumer debt with financial institutions. None of the ChatGPT or anything existed at that time. We actually used a lot of the LLM modules to be able to do that automatically and ended up selling that company to Acorns in 2021. That was sort of a rocket ship from 2018 to 2021 because,
wow,
you know, it scaled really, really well. We're literally helping end consumers getting their, you know, overdraft fees, account fees, maintenance fees, all of that directly with our automated chatbot that we built using natural language processing. We had our own data labeling team in Asia as well. So did a lot of that. And then we wanted to get back into like, you know, payments. And then it was really the time in, you know, sometime end of 2021 where we saw the rise of stable coins and stable coins as a method of, you know, solving the cross-border payments, making it easier, faster, cheaper. And we started looking into this more and more, and we bump into payroll because that is the biggest use case in payments. Everybody needs to get paid, whether US, internationally. We saw a lot of you know, folks in crypto, like in all of the contributors getting paid in, you know, starting to get paid in crypto as well. And that's how we, you know, that's how the Noodle was born, to be able to, you know, help with the cross-border payments, you know, build like an amazing payment rails, and then add all these other HR and payroll tools on top of it.
Oh, wow. So you mentioned that, like, you know, you originally came from this banking background, but then went to like payments. And now you also mentioned, like, before we started recording that, like, you said your co-founders and everything are in Austin as well. Like, yeah. Is it like, how was that? Like, one of the things that fascinates me personally is that, like, you know, we have a bunch of people, like our listeners are not only core team, but founders, but also builders themselves. And it's always interesting to me to see like how do founders come together? How did you guys find each other to like go on this journey?
Well, one of my co-founders is also my wife. So that was really easy. So that was really easy. And then, you know, once we, and because, you know, we're second time founders, you know, raising capital was a little bit easier than the first time around. She was more involved in the, you know, the first business that we built, and she had an amazing tech background, but none of us are technical. Both of us are not technical. We're more like a business and other folks. So we do have to, you know, we have to find engineers to be able to help us build this company. And, you know, for Neural, we ended up, you know, for the last company, we used a lot of the people in Ukraine at that time. Ukraine was very famous to do that. And then for this company, we found, you know, Serene, which is another founding engineer here in the team based in Austin. He was in CrowdStrike for a long time, and he was also ready to basically move into the startup world. And then Bravin, another our founding engineer, he was with Acorns as well. And, you know, we also brought him over from Acorns, and that's how, you know, we met those two guys, and that's how, you know, we started building.
Oh, wow. That is awesome. I got to ask. So I have a failed startup actually with my wife. Yeah. I will be fully honest about this. I wear my failures very proudly. I think it's a good thing because it like adds to, you know, it's like adds more stripes on you because you can't just have wins, right? You got to learn more from your failures than you do your successes. How is it like on the first startup working with your wife? And now obviously you're running it back. So it needs, it's amazing. How do you segment this relationship? Because it's like, you know, when you run a startup, you're 24/7, 365. So it's like now there's no house, like work separation. Yeah, yeah. How do you manage that?
So the last one, what I was a little bit more passive and she was the one who was running the company. So it was a little bit easier because, you know, because we were working with banks, I helped with the motor, those compliance, regulatory, and all of those other things that I could help with. On this one, though, you know, we're equal partners. And, you know, this time around, we also have a son. And, you know, pandemic happened, right? And this is one of those things, the life experiences will teach you what you do next. And, you know, we also wanted to raise our son properly. We also wanted to visit different places, you know. And, you know, for us to do that, I was actually going to start another, you know, crypto company around DeFi to be able to do, like, institutional DeFi investments. I already raised money for that, too. And then she was going to do something else. And we realized if we do two startups, you know, with the sun, it's just going to be a crazy, impossible task, right? And so we thought we'll just combine our expertise and start one, and let's think about a bigger use case. And maybe this will be a big, big business down the road, like a generational type of business. And that's how we set on this. And this allowed us to live in Asia for 4 months, live in somewhere else for a couple of months, take our son with us. And that kind of, you know, sealed the deal for us, is like a finding that right balance between, you know, experiencing a lot of different places and, you know, lifestyle, having to raise, you know, our kid together, and then also working on a project that we both feel passionate about. And she wanted to do something on payments at some point. I wanted to do something on payments, make it easier. So it all kind of came together to do it at the same time and together. Yes, obviously there are boundaries, right? So I think, you know, the advice is like, startup, regardless of your spouse is on the cap table or not, it's always your co-founder. You're going to be talking about this 24/7.
Yeah.
But if you just put some boundaries around, like, hey, you know, let's take this day off, and we just focus, you know, we just do like some personal stuff and others. In the beginning, it's difficult to separate that out because you're constantly thinking about it. You're anxious about it, like, oh, what's going to happen? And once you start to get in the rhythm, once you start to trust the process a little bit, set some boundaries. Once you start to get your first customers, now you're thinking about other things. I think it'll start to get much better, you know, in terms of that work-life balance with your wife and spouse. But the startup journey will never get better, right? I mean, it's always difficult, you know.
Yeah.
There are always different problems you're solving literally every single day.
Yeah, for me, it was one of those things I asked because, like, you know, we have a kiddo as well. So, you know, she's no longer, like, I left the startup to go focus on more crypto native stuff.
Right.
But before, when we did that, one of the things is exactly like you said, it's this anxiety around, like, you know, you're always like, even now, everyone has it, right? You could be running $100 million company or $100,000 company, but you have this anxiety that's natively building in you. Finding a good way to manage that. But like you said, you know, the best person, your partner is your co-founder in building a life. So, you know, I can't imagine a better person to, like, you know, have on your side and work with. You just have to, you know, like you said, explain things, communicate, and then set some boundaries. Which is
communication is very important, right? Because there are some high tensions at times, you know, about certain issues and situations where, you know, a startup is, you know, you set out with something that you want to do, and then you pivot, like, you know, there's a micro pivot, sometimes major pivot, you know, those, you need to have, like, you know, better communication between, you know, between the teams. So the founder, just like, you know, talking to the founder of yours, right? And like, hey, what are we going to do to solve this? Do we need to pivot here? Do we need to make this change? And, you know, those type of discussions will, you know, will happen. And, you know, you just have to find a way to deal with that and, you know, be more upfront about no egos, you know, and you basically, you both want to make the business successful, right? And having that communications and pursuing the right idea at the right time is the way to go.
That's awesome, man. Yeah, I had a question then, like, since you guys have, like, this, you know, you both came from this background of, like, tech, but business, right? You come from this, like, TradFi world as well, right? And you're now co-founders, right, in this company, and you also were co-founders together in this previous company. How does, like, your combined experience with work, plus the fact that, you know, you've built a life together outside of work, think about, like, what kind of offering you offer in Neural? Like, was that one of the key things where you're like, oh, we saw things differently that could, like, separate us in our offering to, like, compared to other people?
Yeah. So my co-founder also was a product manager. So she was more into tech than me because she was an investment banker, left to join an early startup company that was acquired by Twitter. And they were doing, like, in real-time advertising tech back in the day. And got bought by Twitter for like $1 billion when she joined this company as a very early employee. And they were like revolutionizing the mobile ad tech industry at that time. And so she has more experience in dealing with and how to, you know, build the product, how to work with engineers, what's tech stack to use. I don't have that experience. I'm more about, you know, how to manage company finances, how to go to market business. I've also led sales for a large global payroll company in between for a couple of years as well. So we both have seen the infrastructure of how dire these payroll infrastructures are, how dire these, you know, payments infrastructure are. Think about in the US, right? You send somebody your money, it takes you 3 days. I mean, that's ridiculous, right? if you go to Asia, Brazil, you know, some of these countries, you can do it instantly, right? So there are definitely issues. And is it because of technology or is it because, you know, bank being greedy and making money in between? Like, you know, it's both, right? It's definitely both. So we both saw, you know, the rise of stable coins, and this is going to be a future for payments. This is going to be one of the best in a primitive for crypto in anything. And it'll start with the consumers, but then, you know, the B2B is even more dire in terms of the infrastructures. And I think this is going to disrupt that industry. So that's our underlying thesis, to use stable coins as a method of payment. Yes, today we may need to do hybrid. We may need to have both parallel rails, and which we do have today. Like, we have a crypto rails and have a parallel fiat rails, where we can move money even on a fiat rails, same day settlement globally, and, you know, instant settlements on the crypto side. And we do think the world's going to collide at some point, right? And maybe not right now. And so we call ourselves like a Web 2.5 businesses, where we serve both Web 2 customers, Web 3 customers. And we're, you know, the goal for us is to get more and more of these Web 2 customers start to utilizing Web 3 products without even realizing it. And I think that's where we'll start to see a massive adoption of crypto. And I'll give an example of that today, right? You know, today, like, you can go buy a tokenized treasury funds. And with the click of a button, you don't even realize it's blockchain powering that, you know, the treasury funds with the daily liquidity. I mean, that's amazing, right? And the banks have not been able to offer that yet. Now BlackRock and all these other institutional investors are getting into it. So if we can make the Web3 architecture that seamless, where people don't need to know, they just need to click a button and get what they want, I think that's how we're going to start to see the adoption of crypto in everything that we do. And that's our philosophy, is to actually make the UI so easier so that they don't even think about it.
Totally agree with that. I mean, if you think of anything else that you use, like, how many of us actually know what web services we use right. Amazon Web Services, Azure, whatever. Right. We don't know. We just know that it works. And that's what the client's ultimately going to care about, for sure.
Yeah. So, and if you need to send money to someone in, you know, India or Nepal, right, you know, you send the money, do you really care what's powering behind the scene? And, you know, you expect them to get it instantly. And, you know, the blockchain architecture is making that available. And that's how the adoption's just going to happen, right, without people even realizing it. And obviously, a lot of these banks, institutional, you know, capital, institutional folks will start to make like, oh, yeah, that's this and that's that. And that's what we're seeing with SEC and all of that. But all this is, I call it, this is just the noise, right? And maybe they're just selfishly, they're just creating that, so they're buying time to get into this. And that's how I think about it, right? You have a Jamie Dimon coming in and in basically scolding crypto folks and Bitcoin, but then their clients are buying tons and tons of it, and JP Morgan buying a ton of Bitcoin ETF, right? If they say one thing, do another thing. So that's what I think, because they move very, very slowly. And, you know, by the time they, you know, clear the air, they would have positioned themselves as a player. And I think that's what's happening. We're starting to already see that with, you know, some of the institutional adoption of real world, you know, asset tokenization, right? So I think, you know, it's coming, whether it's going to be next 5 years, 10 years, and inevitable, right? And it's going to come. It's going to happen.
Yeah, 100%. I agree with both of you. Yeah. It's really funny, right? Like, if you look at the timing, there was, what is it, JP Morgan was building Onyx, right? Which was their own privatized chain. I'm guessing during your JPM days, you might have probably seen a report where it's like, Project Onyx. You're like, what the fuck is Project Onyx?
Exactly.
You know? And that's there. We had Cadena, which were ex-Morgan guys, I think, that also did that stuff too. And those were all like pretty last cycle. I mean, it's pretty early, right? Before Jamie goes on there and then says, hey, you know, like, you should never buy Bitcoin. And like you said, you know, they're just taking this huge position on it, either directly onto the into the asset or by a instrument like the ETF. I think that ultimately the most important point to impress there, though, is that, like you said, like, you're betting on this asset class, and the fact that the tech stack is like so simple to use. Like, I mean, it's just exponentially faster. And then more importantly, you're trying to build the UX so that like a retail participant or an enterprise participant can see this and be like, I don't see any difference between a Web 2 stack and a Web 3 stack. Right. And it's just magically happening, right? Ultimately, technology should be like akin to like magic. You're just you just use it, but you don't understand how it's there. And that's the magical experience, right? I think crypto might be the one that actually makes that happen, which is pretty fucking cool.
Yeah, absolutely. On the payment side, you know, there's it's the one, right? Even FedNow, you know, they don't tell you what's behind the scene, you know, but it's probably, you know, some of the blockchain technologies that they're using to do instant settlement anyway, right? It's a ledger that basically they're maintaining in in a private, like, and basically that's what that is, but they don't tell you that. And until everybody, you know, adopts, you know, FedNow, and all of a sudden now you have instant settlement, but it is powered by blockchain, you know, and when you look beneath the surface. So, you know, cases like that, and same thing, you know, our position on the HR payroll side is also same thing, right? Payroll is already, like, I haven't heard a single person say, I love ADP. Like, you know, ADP is like, you know, around for 105 years, right? So it's hundreds of years. There's a report named after ADP that comes on Friday that moves the market. I mean, that just shows you how dominant ADP been over the years. And every small company, every startup that comes and builds payroll software, what they do, they end up buying them anyway and then shutting them down, and then just becomes the ADP. So that's what kind of interested us. You know, yes, it's a boring, you know, like somebody told me, like, hey, you went from a, you know, building like an AI automated agents to like building payroll. Yes, because, you know, if you understand the how big this could be, and there's like so many ways you can make money. And we're really, really fascinated, you know, as my CFO background, I can kind of understand the money movements and everything else really, really well. And we're like, there is a, one, it's very difficult to build payment infrastructure in the US. Like, think about all of these, like, you know, tens of thousands of tax codes that you have to factor in. Thank God for AI and, you know, new infrastructure that we are able to build this on. And that's another thing, right? Because we're also using some of our AI experience here to be able to do, you know, make process much, much easier and faster in the background. And same thing with AI too, like, you know, people, companies will have to use it behind the scene to be able to make processes faster, automate faster. And you can just, you know, can't just go there and do a marketing like an AI company and something magical happen. Doesn't happen. Like, the best companies will use it behind the scene. And these new technologies allowed us to build, you know, our modern platform where we offer a lot of different things, right? So for a company of a 10-person company, they can come in, run US payroll, get benefits, you know, buy PEO, hire employees globally using our, you know, entity called employer of record, bill pay. You can pay globally in hundreds of currencies or USDC or cryptos right from one platform, and then everything syncs to your accounting engine. At the end of the day, people just want things that work. And that's our entire thesis around is like, okay, let's build a new infrastructure from ground up. And we spent two years with the 20% engineering team doing that. And then let's go to market with this so that, you know, it makes everybody's life easier. So today we deploy 3 to 4 different systems for companies. And for crypto companies, we have all of the tools or use cases for them, right? They can pay the entirety of the bill in USDC or USDC or stablecoins. They can, you know, link their wallet. They don't even have to send funds, right? It's more distributed where they can just link their wallet one click and just make the payments from their treasury using Safe, trigger multi-Safe, you know, and do that transaction. That's what the decentralization is about anyway. Mm. So we're kind of like the bridge between, you know, crypto companies operating on-chain and then actually the real life where you have to pay taxes, you have to, you know, buy benefits. So that's why we call it ourselves Web 2.5, because we're bridging that gap right now. But it also gives us a visibility into what's happening in both sides so that we could be progressively more and more decentralized as we go in the future.
Wow. So can I ask then, like, so selfishly, like, you know, we're raising for a startup, right? We have a bunch of funds in a safe, right? Like, for us now, we need to go to the next phase where, like, you know, we have payroll to execute and execution and all that stuff to happen. So how does this work then? Like, let's say me and Luke are co-founders of this company, and we say, hey, we need to pay, you know, Naveen or John or Jack or something like that. Now we run a multi-sig. Does that mean that basically Neural would plug into our multi-sig, which is our, you know, our Genosis safe, and then from there, it would just automatically set it up, and then it would hit our accounting software to be like, hey guys, you made out this payment at this time. This is the regulated payment, and we would not have to worry about that at all. Like, how does this work? Explain architecture.
Yeah, absolutely. So, you know, imagine like in using a traditional software where, you know, you have to sign into our platform, you know, have to obviously fill out your W-4, tax forms, because if you are paying salaries, we do need to take out the tax. So we have the full tax calculation behind the scene. But for you to execute that payroll, pay your employees, rather than using a bank account, you can actually use your corporate treasury account using your Safe, because our app is fully Safe enabled. So you can go to Gnosis Safe, look for Neural, and then you can just run the entire Neural app from there. And what happens is when you hit payments, it triggers your multi-sig. So if John and Ash are two users you have two different wallets, and you go into your wallet and authorize that payment from your wallet, and that's how it works. And then your employees will get paid in, if they want to get paid in crypto, sure, they can get in crypto. Or if they want to get paid in dollars, they'll get paid in dollars. And then we'll just take out the taxes, pay the IRS in US dollars, and file all the tax returns and payroll related filings as well. So literally, we made it so simple that rather than using a bank account, you don't need a bank account. You just use your corporate treasury wallet and pay for it, and it will take care of all of the logistics behind the scene, including all of the compliance. Yeah. We have a lot of DAOs, foundations, they use us, right? They hire employees. And the other thing is also, I don't know if I should share this in the podcast or not, but there's the emergence of employer of record in a product. Deal is famous for doing this internationally for companies. But think about a crypto company that wants to launch token and they don't want to be associated with anything in the US. They hired and they use Neural to hire their employees through our employer of record program, where we employ them using Neural entities. We provide them all of the benefits, W-2s, tax benefits, all of that. And they can, on a single click, they can pay the entirety of that bill right in the platform from their, from their Safe account, from their wallet, using Safe as well. So we made it really, really easy for them to operate globally, not just in the US, from one jurisdiction. And if they don't even have an entity, it's perfectly fine, right? Some of the DAOs don't have an entities, and they can just do that as well.
Oh, wow. So that means that are you taking care of like creating these entities that will basically be showing records of employment for these individuals and then relaying the payments for it within at least in relation to the US itself?
So we would be using Neural's entity, which is why Neural becomes the employer of record for that employee. So we don't even need to create other entities. And we'll just, and that's how that works, right? So let's say, Cayman Foundation, DAOs wants to hire Ash in the US to be able to, and also to be able to get benefits. That's how screwed up in the US, right? Unless you are an employee, you're not going to get benefits.
Yeah.
And we do need benefits in the US, right?
Yes.
So
right.
That's the way we allow companies to hire people compliantly in the US and offer benefits, because if this is hire you as a contractor, you're just going to get that city benefits, which doesn't do anything.
Yeah.
Right. So we do want to make sure the people in this ecosystem are also getting benefits, on incentivized to work in this ecosystem. And that's really what we help companies do it in this space.
Oh, wow. That's pretty fucking powerful.
Yeah, for sure.
That's like a really awkward thing, right? That everyone in the industry kind of is like, okay, are you going to pay me in stable? Are you going to pay me in token? Do I get health benefits? No, you don't get health benefits. You have enough X token, to like, right, maybe cash out, and then maybe it's worth something at the ER, I don't know.
Right.
maybe they also accept, X coin, and the ER specialist will fix your, fracture a little bit quicker.
Right.
Who knows? Most likely not. But that is awesome that you're doing that. I'm guessing that the same kind of advantage of that you're providing in this channel for the US users is what you're also doing for users overseas as well. So you mentioned,
absolutely,
in Nepal.
Yeah, it's 150 countries, absolutely. So if a company comes here and you want to hire a person in Brazil and Nepal and South Africa, you can do it right from our platform. We will generate contracts. You can sign contracts, generate invoices for contractors. Or if you just want to have to pay your vendors in, local currencies or crypto in 7-8 different chains, we can do that seamlessly from one platform.
Wow.
That's pretty cool. And the other thing that kind of made me think about is, like you were talking about earlier in some other companies that you've had, that firsthand experience doing that with hiring folks from the Ukraine and other places too.
Yeah.
I think one of the things that I forget what podcast I heard it on, they were talking about one of the great things about like innovation is build something that you're the first customer of. And so you have that experience, like you needed that, you saw that it was a need, and now you're solving for that need for lots of other folks. That's great.
So we hired a blockchain engineer based in Brazil. The guy wanted to get paid in USDC. This is back in 2021. And we wanted to make sure, you know, rather than using like off wallet, we wanted to make sure we pay him from like some sort of system to be able to do that. Nothing existed. So that's our first product, to be able to hire contractors all over the globe, have them, you know, link their, you know, non-custodial wallets in our system. And then you can bring your wallet and pay them directly. At that point, we're not even taking custody of your, you know, funds, right? We just, our smart contracts literally moving funds from your wallet to their wallet in a seamless fashion, where we are generating invoices and everything else for you, generating transactions for you, so that it goes recorded in your accounting engine, right? So that was our first product, and we were the first user of that product. Absolutely right. Look, I mean, that was the need at that time. Yeah. And if, you know, there was no other provider who could do that. You could do offline, you know, yes, there's always available, but, you know, you have to remember, you know, the wallet, you know, if somebody changed the wallet, you have to go manually do it. We took all of that steps out, and I go back to our UI experience. So it's easy. You come in, link your wallet, you're done, right? And the employer comes in, link their wallet, use a safe, very safe to operate. And, you know, and the user experience is like amazing. And that's something that web to customers could easily use as well. For web to customers, let's say if they need to hire the same contractors, pay them in USDC, they can simply come to our platform, use their bank account because that they are used to with using Plaid. We have full banking integrations. They pay us in US dollars. We will auto do the on and off ramp and then pay that employee or contractor in Brazil in USDC or any other currency, any other, you know, crypto in all of the globe as well. So we have also built that capability to allow for web to customers to be able to utilize the same thing that web3 customers are using as well.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, that's awesome. And I feel like you, I mean, that's great that you give that choice too, because you don't want a company to have to decide, okay, do we want to pay in fiat? Do we want to pay in crypto? And then they've just made that choice for all of, not just themselves, but their employees also. This way, you can kind of customize to like, okay, this employee wants to get paid this way, or this jurisdiction only allows them to get paid this way. And you can deliver whatever is needed. So you can really be that one-stop place for that.
Yeah. And then, you know, the demand is coming from these countries like, you know, Argentina, Brazil, you know, Southeast Asia, Africa, where, you know, with the currency devaluation that's happening every single day, none of those guys wants to get paid in, you know, in their local currency, right?
Yeah.
And for them, what's the choice? In US, yes, we can open a US dollar bank account, but they cannot offer and open up a US dollar bank account. So what's the best alternative? The best alternative is to get paid in stablecoin, which is close to the US dollars, and in fact, dollar for dollar with US dollars. And then they can always go to exchanges and, you know, off ramp whatever they need for the daily purposes. At least at that point, their, you know, salary that they've earned is not devaluing just by holding on to it, right? They're holding on to, you know, stablecoin, which is why this is more powerful. Stablecoins are very powerful in these emerging countries. I think there was a study somebody told me about 6% of Turkey's circulations is all stablecoin right now. So it's gaining a lot of momentum in outside of the US, right? In the US, you know, we're a little bit spoiled because, you know, even though it takes 3 days to send somebody a money, but we can still have all of this, you know, money in US dollars. But outside of US or outside of maybe Europe, you know, what they can get in Euro, all the countries suffer from this, you know, devaluation of the currency. So this is why stablecoins is taking off in all of these countries. And there's a huge demand when you go hire someone. The difference is like, hey, can you pay me in a stablecoin? And they will basically use that as a method leverage to either to take that job or not. We are seeing that. We have now seen that a lot in our platform.
Wow. Yeah, I mean, like it seems like whenever you started, you built this solution to that first problem of paying, you know, your engineer in Brazil. Yeah. Like it seems like you guys started with the idea that like this is always going to be a global thing, right? We can localize solutions to like certain places, but ultimately our use case is very global. And since crypto is like so like decentralized, right? In a way, like this is a very powerful thing for us to have these both channels to go through, which is pretty cool. I was curious though, like, I mean, have you had any issues with like, so in the US, you know, like, as you said, like there's either purposefully regulations that slow down the adoption of stables or either these dual channel payments, right? Where it's like in a way that you can function as an on-ramp to users to come in and then basically utilize these payment rails and go out. But have you faced any of these kinds of challenges actually in the global environment outside? I know there's massive adoption on a retail level, but I'm just curious, like if you're like, oh, dude, like we hit roadblocks here and here, and this is some of the challenges.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah. You don't, I mean, there's like so many roadblocks and, you know, there's so many things. Like one of the banks that we're working with was called Signature Bank. And all of a sudden, like on Sunday, just, you know, not available anymore. Right.
So yeah.
There are many, many, many roadblocks, you know, just for, you know, some of the bank partners, we have to keep our marketing separate. We have to keep our, you know, website separate. You know, there's so many roadblocks, you know, in the U.S., because of the regulations, a lot of the banks are not comfortable working with the crypto companies. There's a severe KYC, KYB that we have to do. Yeah, there's like massive headwinds, absolutely. But there's always a way for you to, you know, start to make more innovative approach, innovative solutions, work with your partners. And, you know, we also want to do this a little bit more compliantly so that, you know, people feel comfortable about it as well, because it's, you know, it's people's salaries, people benefits. So we want to do this the right way, and doing the right way is the hard way in this industry today, unfortunately. So I'm hoping some, you know, common sense regulations gets passed. I was very excited today that, you know, both Congress, you know, passed this first single standalone Bitcoin bill.
Yep.
I hope, you know, Biden signs this, because, you know, we do need some of this in the U.S., right? And you look at even Amsterdam has like now crypto regulations, and then a lot of companies are going in there. Like everybody else is accepting this. And why, you know, in the U.S. is like, you know, it's a nightmare because the two political parties can't get together to pass a common sense bill for this emerging asset that's going to be very, very dominant in like next century.
Yeah.
You know, which is, you know, bizarre, right? And you have this SEC, you know, without providing any guidance, is just like, you know, going after companies. You know, it is bizarre. So, but I'm hoping, you know, some sense will play out, and you know, when things start to go into the right way with these regulations. Because the thing is, like, regardless of what regulation they pass, you know, right, we will be able to work around with that regulations. We just can't work without a regulations or in absence of such, right? Because then we're just sitting in the dark. And we may not like what they pass, but at least there's a, you know, then there's a framework for us to work with. That's what banks used to complain a lot when they're overregulated. But here's just a very different story, right?
Yeah.
And it's an emerging asset. You know, it's the new technology revolution that's going to revolutionize a lot of payments, a lot of these other industries. And, you know, the last 3 years, nothing has happened.
Yeah, it seems like the ABC agencies or the alphabet soup of agencies have always pursued, or, well, it's really strange, right? Historically, they've not had this approach. Now they've adopted this regulation by enforcement kind of approach, which is kind of not even enforcement, right? Because a lot of these kinds of lawsuits are fugazi. They don't have legs. And it's shown, like the courts have shown that like some of these things don't work, guys. Like think of a better attack angle, and then maybe you can get this right, right? And it seems like there's a new playbook that's being adopted, it feels like, where it used to be like, hey, you would bring in a case when they've done something wrong and investors have been hurt, and then you actively go them and then punish them. Right, which everyone wants, right? Because that's how a healthy market should operate. But now it seems like to justify their existence, we just need to bring cases. You know, the more Wells notices you send, apparently the more relevant you are. If not, you're just an ABC agency that's somewhere there, which is kind of hilarious. Because like, if you take this to a period where like the NASDAQ were coming along or high frequency trading was coming along, I'd be like, bro. This industry would be like in the fucking, like, you know, like,
oh, absolutely.
Like dark ages.
I mean, you know, one of the ways we wanted to, you know, bring disruption into this industry is like, think about real-time payments in the U.S. Once, you know, employer pays your salary, they should be immediately get that. And then, you know, they should be able to earn interest in that, right? Because today, like JP Morgan's Bank of America earns like, what, 5% on their deposits? How much do they pass to end consumers? I have a bank account, JP Morgan. I'll tell you, it's probably 0.10%, like 10 basis points. It's ridiculous, right? And, you know, and I think, you know, Coinbase or some others, Kraken got, you know, shut down because they're giving them, you know, 5% yield in their stable coins, which is ridiculous. Like they're not, you know, looking after retail. They're looking after big boys. And hopefully at some point, you know, people, you know, get that and understand that and vote these people out that are not, you know, making decisions based on the people that they sent them. Because that's literally what's happening. And which is what, you know, we wanted to do in the first place, but we just can't because, you know, that just goes off against, you know, the regulations, and we won't have any partners to work with. So we are constrained by what we want to put out, but I'm hoping that at some point, you know, these hurdles will pass, and we'll be able to roll out these products that are much, much more, you know, consumer friendly, cheaper, better, everything else, right? So,
yeah, I mean, hopefully we can get some people, the good people at Stand With Crypto,
yeah, right,
and people like, you know, you, Luke, and everyone else that's in the community and in the tech space is like, guys, like, this is not a net positive, this is a net negative, the way you guys are approaching.
Yeah.
And unfortunately, the world is like America wanting to be, you know, the leader. Like, I know that that's why my parents and like we immigrated here, right? Because we saw that,
yeah,
like,
absolutely.
It's like, hey, there's so much education opportunity and so many things that you can build here and do great things. And America champions that. But it seems like on this regard, this tech stack, which actually would, you know, make us as a society do a fucking quantum leap,
right,
they're clearly, yeah, dropping the ball. And it's kind of disappointing.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah, absolutely. I mean, they also made crypto kind of like the scapegoat for all of these banking failures. Whereas, you know, they had all of these exposure and long-term bonds that they didn't manage that properly. And, you know, and they shut down a couple of the companies because of that. Like, you know, so... You know, it's ironic, but it's happening in front of our eyes, and you know, we'll see. Yeah, and you know, one of the thing that has happened in payroll is, you know, before pandemic, you know, everybody were in office premises, right? And a lot of these legacy companies have built that infrastructure around that to be able to service that particular office, another location. A lot of these companies still run on-prem, right? You know, they have on-prem, not even in cloud. Like, you know, think about, you know, there's already a 20 years people have been using cloud. A lot of these legacy providers still are on-prem. And what that, you know, does not do well for the companies is they're not set up for this like mobile hybrid type of workforce that we're seeing right now. Forget about international. Just in the US, like moving people from one state to another state because there are different tax implications by doing that. And that was our initial focus to actually help in the US with this, you know, mobility. And then now we're seeing that global, right? So I don't expect, you know, ADP, Paychex, Paycom, and all these other legacy companies to be able to accommodate companies to be able to do that globally. They can't. Their infrastructure won't allow it. That's where, you know, companies like ourselves would come into play because of the infrastructure that we built for this hybrid work environment, remote work environment, which are much more flexible. You're able to do a lot of different things in our system that you wouldn't be able to do it in these legacy systems. The UI, the experience, everything is better. All payments are embedded. I will give you a very simple example. We all have used Plaid in our lives now for tens of years.
Yep.
Other than, I think, Rippling, even Gusto stopped doing Plaid. It's expensive, but none of the payroll companies have that Plaid functionality to be able to securely link your account and actually reduce your payroll fraud. Simple example that can make everybody's life easier are not there today. And that's where we're using a lot of these, you know, new modern tools to be able to offer this so that your onboarding is really, really seamless, right? In our platform, you can literally onboard less than like half a minute. It's very, very seamless, self-onboarding. You have access and edit and all of that at your fingertips. And then plus, we built all of these tools internally so that it works seamlessly as well. This industry has been, you know, built on aggregating like a different, you know, people's software that does not work and integrate really well, and which is another thing that we wanted to, you know, rip into place and basically build something that can really, really seamlessly flow data in and out from one place to another place, because that helps us to make their life, the customer's, you know, journey much, much easier. And it also gives rise to various other things that we can do for them, right? And that we're really thinking forward and not just in the payment side, but in general, in terms of modernizing the software stack to be able to service them here at home, internationally, because the hybrid environment is going to stay. 10% companies are global today, and that will continue to be that for next, you know, 30, 40 years. So we wanted to focus on serving that kind of customers. And as those companies get bigger and bigger, they're going to look for a similar thing, and which is why, you know, we can service a 2-person company. We can service a 10,000-person company. We made our, you know, infrastructure much more flexible from that perspective too.
Yeah, no, that's cool. And I do want to kind of get into that a little bit more. So like, if you think of like the target, like the client for Neural, like if you were on that smaller scale, what does that look like for you? Or if you were on the larger side of a company, like what are the solutions that kind of pertain to those folks?
Yeah, so we have lots of startups on our platform. Sometimes they start with two people and now, you know, gone to, you know, like 300 person company in a couple of years as well. And typically they start with like, you know, very basic, like, hey, you know, I'm a founder. I started a company. I need to hire an engineer overseas. I'm not paying myself, but I'm going to pay the contractor. Sure. So they'll start with that. Like, hey, can I pay in USDC, local currency, USD, all kind of flexibility. We even help them generate a contract, like legally vetted contract, if they require one right in our platform. So they don't even have to pay the lawyers or look for one. And then, you know, generate invoices and things like that for accounting purposes as well. And then they're like, okay, now I have funding. I want to run US payroll. I want to provide benefits to myself and my employees. So they'll add US payroll, where we do help with them, you know, running the US payroll, provide benefits. And once they get slightly larger, like 5-7 person company, you know, this is kind of like the weird, you know, this is another area where, you know, where the small business are really, really penalized for being too small. And what we offer is a PEO product where we basically combine all of the pools of our clients and write one underlining policy as if we're a Fortune 500 company, and then get like massive benefits. Mm-hmm. So if they, you know, massive benefits as an afford, you know, amazing benefits at an affordable cost. So we'll graduate them to like a PEO model where we will take care of all of the compliance in every single state, because that's the other thing, right? In the US, you hire an employee here or in other states, you have to do all of that compliance or registration, extra cost, headache. So through an PEO, we manage all of that for them. We actually reduce their healthcare cost by 30 to 40% just by going into our PEO model, because at PEO, we have thousands of employees. We have negotiated a PEO master agreement with insurance companies that allows us to offer the much better benefits at a lower cost. And then, you know, until they become, you know, sort of eligible for those large group benefits, and typically it's around like 80 to 100 employees. At that point, we can underwrite them a policy based on there. So they'll graduate off the full payroll engine, where they can offer like lots of other, you know, benefits. And so we have an approach where you can start with like very small, go to PEO, get out of PEO, and then continue with us, you know, for a long period of time. And that transition is very, very seamless for them. And then we also allow them to, like, you know, pay the entirety of the billings and whatnot through USDC and other means as well. And, you know, so that's the offering in the US. And then internationally, same thing, right? So if you want to hire a, you know, engineer in Brazil or in Argentina and as a contractor, sure, we can set that up. They can set up payments in local currencies, USD, USDC, USDT, other methods as well. If they need to hire an employee, let's say you want to hire a co-founder or you want to turn a contractor into an employee now, that's also coming up, because as you go for like, you know, Series A, Series B fundraising, a lot of the VCs are also asking like, hey, who's in your team is actual employee versus contractor, right? Because they want to make sure that person remains there. And because, you know, there are certain benefits in other countries that will get as being a employee, not being a contractor. So those are coming up a lot more for companies raising funds like Series A, Series B, where we will convert their contractor into employee, and then we'll hire them using Neural entities globally. We are in like 10, 15 different countries right now, but we work with like, you know, partners in other countries, but then it's much more seamless, you know, from our system. They don't need to know. And they can just manage everything from one place, right? So hiring an engineer, in, you know, whether an employee or contractor, takes them a couple of minutes to set it up in our system. And then by the end of it, they can send a contract to an employee. They get onboarded, link their wallet or link their bank, their foreign bank account, and that's how they get paid every month. So it's all these products that they can utilize from one system. And in, depending upon what size company they are, they can utilize some versus the other.
One thing I think I heard you say, are they able to pay bills with y'all as well? Like, did you say you have like a bill pay?
Yes, so we also have like a bill pay functionality where, you know, you can onboard a third, you know, vendor here in the US or globally. They can pay them in, you know, US local currencies, US dollars, hundreds plus different currency available, or they can also pay them in crypto as well. So over seven different chains.
That's awesome. So yeah. That's really cool, because I like the idea that, like, if you had a company that, say, was in a place where they were 100% crypto native, they earned all their revenue in crypto, they paid folks, y'all could be the solution for all of that, including if they had a facility, paying their rent, paying everything like that, which is pretty awesome.
And then we also see these companies, they work with, like, you know, traditional providers like AWS and, you know, some of these accounting firms, audit firms, where they are typically billing them into US dollars, euros, or local currencies as well. So we can take their crypto, and we have an ability to off-ramp and pay them into local currency as well. So, you know, it's a both, right? You know, crypto to local currencies, or local currencies to crypto. That offering is there for them to take advantage as well. So it's really, like, you know, all in one platform. So they really don't need something else, and they can do everything in one place. And then their accounting, you know, systems are, you know, connected through API. So it syncs on a daily basis. So their finance folks, you know, as they start to think more and more about their accounting and finance and records, it's much more seamless for them to manage that side of it as well.
Yeah, it seems like the way, I mean, listening to you speak and listening to the offering that you guys have built, it seems like the best way, because I came in, to be honest, like I came into this, like just did some like high level research, but like wasn't really aware of Neural. But it seems like the best way to describe you guys, in my mind, is like what Carta is to cap tables is what Neural is to HR and payrolls.
Yeah, you could describe that, though, like, you know, where, there are, you know, you can also think of us as like, you know, think of like a Gusto, Deal.com and Bill.com. Yeah. Deal and Bill.com combine into one. That's then have a crypto use case. That's what we are. You know, having those three or four companies combine into one platform. And that's really what we wanted to do from the beginning, because we saw it for ourselves, right? We needed to run payroll in the US. We needed to like, you know, offer benefits to our employees. We also needed to hire certain employees internationally. We hired contractors internationally. We have vendors all over the place. So it was like, well, if we are going through all of this, every single company is probably going through all of this. And it just became a, you know, kind of like a use case that, you know, we spoke to a lot of people and like, oh, I wish I could have that because I have like three systems or four systems and they don't talk to each other. And, you know, accounting is a mess because, you know, none of them integrated, you know, seamlessly into our accounting system. It takes forever. Like, you know, this guy is complaining, that guy is complaining. So we're like, why don't we do it all once and make it more seamless? And that's why it took us a while to get off the ground, because we needed to build all of this infrastructure, right? And built all of this infrastructure, even with our like 18% engineering team from day one, was a lot. Like, you know, it was a lot. And then to refine it, to make it work. So it really took, and it, you know, it actually worked out for us that 2022 and 2023 was a bear market, but it allowed us to sort of in the belt. And then we went to market, you know, sometime around Q2 of 2023. And then now we have close to about 400 clients in the platform. We're growing like, you know, 30-40% month over month. My sales team has now grown to be like 7 people in the US already. So, you know, we're like 50-55% team right now. So, and now, you know, the all of that hard work that we put in and the bet that, okay, this is what the next, you know, 20-30 years is going to work, starting to pan out, you know, for us in real life.
That's fantastic, man. But
it was hard, I'll tell you. Like, and I don't think I'll ever build a payroll company again, because this is like
this is like the Zuckerberg moment, like, where he's like, guys, we need regulation for payroll. This is like, you can't build this shit.
No. We don't even need regulations. Like, somebody who like, you know, I've actually spoken to a lot of people. They're like, yeah, you know, I went to payments and we like locked the payroll use case, how sticky it is. And then we got into it for a couple of months, and then it was like so deep, so detailed. We're like, we can't do it. And I was like, we just got out. We went to different things. You don't need regulations. Like, people will just want to build it. You need to understand this deeply, deeply, deeply enough, and have a long view for you to build it. Otherwise, it's insanely hard in the US because, as I said, like, you know, you have a federal, state, local. You go to Pennsylvania, there's like fucking 10,000 different tax codes in Pennsylvania and Ohio. Like, you know, it's insane. And some of them don't even publish in a website. They're literally in the PDF, and, you know, they're basically put in a bulletin board, like in 1980s. That's how the tax system.
Like, why is this on? Why is the tax code for this state written in graph paper and crayons? You know, like,
literally, like, you know. So that's how fragmented this whole space is, which is why it takes a long time to be able to do this. And obviously now, you know, we are using a lot of these newer tools to be able to do that. But it's also to refine it, to make it accurate, takes a long time as well. So, yeah, it's like you see all of these in the gray hairs, you know, it's all from these last 2 years. But, you know, once again, I think, you know, we wanted to modernize this whole thing, which is why we basically went through this process. And glad we did it, because now we're starting to see the, you know,
benefits. That is awesome, man. I guess like my question is like, what is your advice for other businesses outside of just using Neural, right? Because like, I know that we're now going to, me and my co-founder are probably going to be looking at this and be like, holy shit, man, like, maybe we could just use this and we can just do what is our core competency, which is like build our fucking business and serve our community, which is the core competency that we're, you know, every startup founder should, you know, every startup founder should have. But like, what is the big business advice that you would give to other founders or people that are wanting to make that jump? Because it's like, you've 2x'd already. Like, you've done this and you've exited. So like, what is the thing?
You know, a lot of people get excited about shiny things where they're like, okay, I'm going to build something. They expect overnight results. You know, sad reality is not going to happen. There's a lot of blood, sweat, and tear that you have to, you know, go through to build a startup. And it is very difficult, but if you are truly solving a problem, you know, just, you know, focus on solving the problem. Don't focus on the monetization first and make sure that the problem is real. Because, you know, in our Web3 community, like, you know, I've met several people where they're solving problems that didn't exist. And not just in the Web3, in other places as well. And those type of business will fail, right? Just because somebody else did it and copy them, it's just not a great idea. Be a little bit more thoughtful, you know, do a little bit more research, talk to as many people as possible before you start building it, right? Talk to the, you know, potential customers. They'll tell you what the problem is. A lot of people have frustrations about using certain things or doing certain things. They'll tell you what the issues are. They will even tell you what the solution is, right? So if you are passionate about it in some vertical, make sure you're passionate about, you know, solving that problem as well, right? And that, if you're passionate about solving a problem, if you're actually tackling a problem, sooner or later, that will become a reality. And then you just need to find a way to articulate in a way where, you know, you're going to get a funding for it, right? And a lot of people also, you know, this is my opinion, right? If I were to start a business, I would not bootstrap from day one, especially a first-time founder. I would go, you know, articulate my idea, get a smaller check, pre-seed, whatever it is, like even a couple $100,000 just to test the, you know, the theory out, right? And there are angels and others who are willing to bet on you. But you just need to make sure you've done some research and you're passionate about what you want to do. And I think, you know, and don't think about like, okay, you know, next year I'm going to be a $50 billion business. It's not going to happen, but you have to take it one step at a time. And, you know, it's also okay to go into a different domain which you don't understand. Have a co-founder. That's what I tell people. Because it's a lonely, lonely journey, okay? There can be so many ups and downs in a startup. Like, you know, it's crazy sometimes. You need somebody to talk to, okay? You need to be able to bounce ideas. You need to be able to, like, you know, hold hands at some point and, like, hey, let's keep going. Like, some encouragements from your founder or somebody else. Have that support system built around you and, you know, reach out to other founders, reach out to others who have done it, make them advisors. You know, I think that if you have that support system, have a co-founder, you know, if you're really solving a problem, if you follow those things, I think sooner or later, you're going to be successful and most likely than not, you'll be successful.
That's super powerful, man. Like, I really wanted to end on that thought, but I got to also ask, like, right. Dude, like, you know, what else do you want to share about Neural, about crypto, payroll, you know, like things that are coming up that you're like super fucking excited about? Like, let us know. And then obviously, like, where do you know, people like our listeners or other people from the DAO or just the extended community, like, how do they find you? Like, how do they ping you and be like, yo, this is great. I'd like to use your product. Or like, yo, I need some advice. Like, I would love to talk to you. It seems like you've climbed that mountain.
Yeah.
Like, so. How do they get in touch?
Yeah, I mean, I'm in Yeah, I'm an ATX DAO member. So I've been a member since I think last year, right? So I'm all, you know, some, I try to, you know, come to this ATX DAO event. So we'll have a booth in Consensus, you know, please come visit us. Or you can just write to me in Telegram, Nabeen_Neural. My Twitter is also Nabeen_Neural. Just make it easier for folks. Or you can also reach me in LinkedIn. I am in a lot of different events in Austin. Feel free to, you know, ping me there or whatever. Yeah, in terms of crypto, listen, I'm very, very optimistic now. There are two, you know, theme that's going to, if you are a builder looking to build on this, there are two themes that I'm really, really psyched about. One, obviously, the whole payments thing, which we're playing right now. And there are like different verticals you can do, right? And there are different things you can do around payments, stablecoin payments, and DeFi. I think that will continue to evolve. I'm also super bullish in real-world asset tokenization. You know, right now, you have this high interest environment. A lot of institutional investors are putting their money in money market fund where they're getting 5% return. Listen, for them, 5% is great, right? Maybe for you and I, it's not great. For them, 5% is amazing. You know, no risk return, right? Risk-free return. As the interest rates goes down, these people will look for, you know, better yields, you know, for their treasury market. I think that's where this real-world assets tokenization will come into play. With the daily liquidity, if you're able to build in that theme, and don't just look for one product, try to build some of the products where, you know, I think that institutional adoptions will make a lot of business successful, and that's coming. And it's very simple. It's, you know, it's multinational, it's cross border, and there's a lot of opportunity in that space. I think NFT will probably make comeback, but, you know, somehow differently though, because think about corporations, right? They're greedy. We're all greedy. You know, we want to make money and profitable. And if I don't have to produce something, just do a, you know, produce NFT that costs me next to nothing and sell it at in hundreds of thousands of dollars, why not? So every company will continue to do that. I know we're probably in that lull space right now. So that's another, you know, thing that I'm psyched about. And, you know, and just these other use cases where, you know, the smart contracts and executing transaction, I think there is a, you know, combination of AI and blockchain in a lot of these companies that's going to make these, you know, tools even more powerful. You know, those are definitely coming. But I'm really psyched about, you know, the stable coins payment method settling in real time, you know, making everything cheaper, faster, better. And then RWA, real-world asset tokenization, because now you have the big guys, you know, jumping in it, right? So that typically shows that, okay, there's a new wave coming there.
That's awesome, man. Yeah, dude, I mean, I'm just going to try and have to process all this now, and I'm going to have to, like, rock neural stack to be like, holy shit, like, should we just integrate with this? And if we ever build a stable coin on Dogecoin, I'm pretty sure I'd be like, yo, it'll be hilarious to be like, I can't believe this crazy asshole that I did an interview with is like gonna try and convince me to get a Dogecoin stable coin out here and on our payments platform. But like, I will definitely check it out, man. This is awesome. Thank you so very much for your time, dude. It is dope. We gotta see you out in like a lot more of these events, man. Like, I wish I met you earlier, because like, it would have been great to like also just talk to you along the way as we're building, think about, you know, different kinds of problem sets to validate things. But dude, I'm looking forward to seeing you at Consensus.
Yeah, absolutely. And you know, we're going to be doing a lot of events. So, you know, we'll probably do some events with ATX DAO as well. I've been traveling a lot in the last like past whatever, you know, 9 months, whatever. I have international travel coming up, but then I'll be much more available in Austin. Yeah, looking forward to meeting guys in over the pier and talk about lots of different things. You know, listen, we all seem to came from like TradFi event, and this, you know, I think we're very, very early still. We're just scratching the surface, and I think this is going to be a huge. In 20 years, we can look back this podcast and we're like, yeah, you know, we're in the right there in the right time. And I think this space is just going to be completely different.
Hell yeah, man.
100%.
Dude, thank you.